Empower your leadership journey with the CEO Series. Whether you're at the gym, strolling, or commuting, our impactful dialogues with world-class leaders are just a click away. Immerse yourself in the minds of visionaries shaping today's most influential companies and innovations. It's not just an interview. It's a masterclass in leadership. Don't miss out. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and major streaming platforms.
Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. If it's Friday, you know it's the CEO Series, where we bring to you the most inspiring leaders from across the globe. And today, I want to welcome my very good friend, Brian Wimpen, who's a luminary in the realm of leadership. He's an author, entrepreneur, mental health, addiction recovery champion. His career is a tapestry of resilience, from strategic pivots, just remarkable achievements. His new book, F the Demons, Redefining the Normal, tells this powerful story about transformation, showing how essential to be open and to redefine what's considered normal by society, especially in addiction recovery. So with that, I want to welcome Brian. How are you, man?
Oh, my friend, it is so good to see you and visit with you. I'm doing well, and we have we're about 10 years overdue of catching up. So, but it's great to see you.
You know, the key that I love about this show is that I get a chance to talk to all my friends who I haven't talked to in a while, who's all doing great things. And, you know, we get a chance to kind of share to the global audience that we have. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, and it's one of the absolute positives of social media is I get to see, you know, which country and what Ron Thomas is doing. So I get to keep up that way.
Okay, cool. Okay. You got me on that one. So let's talk about your career. I mean, like, you've gone through a lot of challenges, but one of the things I've always admired, you know, from you and looking at the challenges you've gone through, you were always able to kind of bounce back. And now I'm going to use this in a way that, and you'll understand what I mean, you're at the so-called top of the pyramid. Now you're guiding other people. But walk us through the journey as to how you arrived at that spot.
Yeah, and like, you know, like most people, we, and thank you for the, you know, for the invite to be here, by the way, first and foremost. It's an honor to spend some time with you. I really respect just the conversations, you know, so I tune in like everybody else. So, but you know, it's interesting. We all have these chapters or phases in our, you know, in our career, in our life. I mean, they're intertwined. And you know, that all started out, I mean, it goes way back, right? I was very lucky to have incredibly hardworking family. Like, origin story came from really hardworking people. And so I don't know any different. You know, if I don't understand something, then I'll just grind it out and try and work harder than people. Mm-hmm. And even through all the different, you know, navigating different career changes and life changes and, you know, challenges with, you know, both, you know, just emotional and mental health and addiction. At the end of the day, the core was, I just got to keep working harder. Okay. Because it's, you know, I didn't have the facilities so much to be smarter about it, because I was navigating a whole bunch of side things that were impacting everything. So I just kept working harder, which is, you know, it's not always the best answer, because your work-life balance, which, you know, we'll probably talk about at some point, it gets thrown into complete disarray, right? And then, so instead of being a, you know, your other isms that come into play, you know, get compounded by, you know, work, you know, being a workaholic. Mm-hmm. because that's the only way that I felt I could take control throughout my entire life was like, I just got to work harder.
Yeah. But you know, as you mentioned that, did you see that as kind of, now that you look back on it, because, you know, the insight always comes once you reflect on that. But staying focused, that you, if you were stayed focused on work, you could kind of navigate. Whereas you, if you didn't, it was 1,001 things coming through at one time. Was that kind of an anchor to, I need to stay focused?
Yeah, absolutely. Like that's an area. So kind of to step back to your question, and it applies to what you're asking is, so throughout my career, I graduated college. And, you know, that was a gift from that institution unto itself, that they gave me a degree. And as I rolled into like early career, you know, that was one of those things that, you know, I was in full like raging addiction at that point. And so, and didn't really learn, like, I just kind of needed to conclude that and move on to the next, and then fell into something, kind of fell into HR. Oddly enough, early on. And it was one that if I worked hard and I was smart enough to comprehend, at least at that time, kind of what the mission was and what was most important. And I was able to focus on all of the things that were most important to that organization. Okay. and kind of eliminate the noise. And I've always been able to do this, is really kind of get to what the core focus is, and then just completely hit the gas on that. Mm-hmm. And because of that ability to do that, even at, you know, 24, 25, it really kind of just hockey sticked up to the right, my ability to move up and navigate and fix problems. So okay. I became a problem solver.
Okay.
Because I was willing to move and I was willing to take on whatever problem. Yeah. I knew that, and there was just tons of opportunity. And so, and tons of opportunity that took me to, you know, to different parts of the world, different parts of the country. Like I had a ton of responsibility, had no tools to actually communicate or manage. I mean, as I was moving up in my career, the tools that I were using to cope and navigate the stress and what the responsibility was increased use of alcohol. Luckily, I'd left drugs behind, thank God, because I'd be dead.
Okay.
I figured that one out. But then the alcohol was just the cope. That was my go-to coping mechanism. I didn't have those skills. And so, you know, on the surface, we were, you know, I was very successful. And in the back, I mean, it was, you know, the phrase dumpster fire is an old adage. I mean, it's a vintage term that was my life, like summed up. And so,
wow. So, you know, it's interesting that you talk about that, because what we see, and I'm sure people saw that, they didn't realize there was an underpinning or an anchor there that was sustaining that. So when did it come to a point that, you know, that maybe you were found out, or you realized that, you know what, I've got to make a change?
Yeah, it's, I mean, there was a lot, you know, I'm trying to think here. I actually drank for 27 years. I started when I was 14. It was the first time I had a chance to drink. I had a full blackout, right? 14 years old. And so, and it was a great, and it was,
no gradual steps, right?
It's interesting. So I've sat down with folks probably 1,000 times over the last 13 plus years since I've been in recovery. And I've had this conversation, you know, and it's so consistent that as soon as there was like, the consequences were pulled away and you were like, whatever you want to do into this world of changing how you feel, like it's all on. It is so consistent that people just went, they literally hit the on-ramp at 100 miles an hour. Wow. Like I hear it consistently, whether it's 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16, 17, as soon as they didn't have any consequences. And I was this way, I had no consequences. And it was like whatever I wanted to do in front of me. And I just wanted to just completely anesthetize, right? I wanted to, it felt so good. I didn't, everything just fell to the wayside and made sense. And I remember it as clear as we're talking in this conversation right now. Like I remember that so clearly to the point that I blacked out. I don't remember that, but it just was one of those that I'm like, oh, I fit in. Right. It was with older kids, like it was an older kids party. And I was pretty good in sports. And so we were just one of the, me and another guy were like the two people that got invited that were the, you know, the young people, the freshmen in high school, and it was all seniors. And, but we were sports, right? We started on the team and we went and it was wheels off. Like it was like, you know, and it was next day, you know, I got sick and, you know, I think there might've gotten in a fight, who knows. And the next day felt like death warmed over and I couldn't wait to do it again. Like wow. I was like it literally was okay. Now that makes sense to me. And so there was a consistency there. And you know, that worked as a coping skill. And you hear this, that worked as my coping skill until it didn't. Okay. And then it really started to be the anchor, right? And so that's the interesting thing about like the, you know, kind of the dependency or the disease of addiction is it's, you know, it works until it doesn't. And then it literally convinces you that it's working until you get to the point.
Yeah.
And this kind of to answer your question, it was, I was at an HR conference, like again, and it had been progressing for a couple months that I had crossed the, you know, I don't give a shit line. And once that line got crossed, it's one of those things that I'd always kind of manage the, you know, the destruction. Right. Mm-hmm. And, but I crossed that imaginary line of, I don't care. Like I literally just, it wasn't so much a conscious thought, but unconsciously, I just didn't care anymore.
Wow.
And that progressed so fast over a couple months. And it was interesting. So kind of what came to an end, the found out piece, right? Like it was interesting because social media was just taken off and there was going to be a lot more visibility that was super transparent.
Yeah.
And I literally had just a moment of clarity that it's, you know, everybody is really going to understand who I am, like truly.
Found out.
And so I think that contributed to just it kind of contributed to the equation starting me piecing together. Then okay. I felt miserable. I just had to do something different because I didn't know if I was going to survive.
Okay.
And that was the clarity is like, you know, I might be in a, you know, I could go into a blackout and take, you know, hurt somebody driving or something, or, you know, could end up taking my own life. Like it was really significant inflection point. And so I made a decision and I said, I'm going to call somebody that I know, is in recovery, has been a long time. That's a friend. And I reached out and he was ridiculous. He was more gracious than I had been in our relationship. And he never missed a beat.
Wow.
And we sat down and he, you know, he shared how he did it, why he did it, you know, and some of the mechanics behind it. And that, you know, when they talk about grace, you know, that I've had a lot of grace in my life that I didn't understand. I didn't appreciate. I didn't think I deserved it for a gazillion years. My entire life, I've just had all these moments of grace that I can. You know, I always kind of knew. I mean, I'd always be like, somebody is looking out for me.
Because I can't continue to keep getting through all this. So somebody's got to say, okay, go ahead.
somebody, something that I don't, I can't explain.
Yeah.
I don't need to explain has at least got maybe doesn't have my back, but at least they got my hand to pull me out of the fire or out of in front of the truck, you know. So,
You know, as you tell that story, you talked about when it all came to a head was at an HR conference, and that was kind of the moment. And we'll get to that in just a bit. But people that suffer from any kind of addiction, they have signals. And it may not, they may have five signals a week, but for some reason, at one point in time, something pops up and says, you know what, I really need help. Is that kind of what you went through, and you had gone through signals and because from 14 years old to college to working, still being addicted, something had to, and I'm sure you had a lot of flashes during that time.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I got exposed to recovery through different people, and I had tried, you know, had tried a few times because I knew that life could be better. Like, I saw that, but you just don't process it that way when you're so into, like, you're so in your head. And so it really was like, I to this day, I can't explain it.
Okay.
Right. It's one of those things that, like, there wasn't, like, it wasn't a big, like, I've had some really, like, really, really significant, humiliating, you know, illegal, like, I can go down the list of things that have happened in my life that I somehow got on the other side of, right? This wasn't, and sometimes that's what it takes, right? You need something significant, whether it's, and it could be, like, the threat, like, it could be jail. Right. It could be jail. It could be hospital. It could be, like, you know, a personal plea from family and friends. It could be, you know, threat of loss, you know, losing your relationship, losing your job, losing all your money. There's a lot of different kind of springboards to get people to take a hard look at recovery.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It was, you know, waking up, you know, that the morning, it was in Chicago. On May 9th, 2010, I woke up and went, you know, I have got to do something different going forward today. I've got to do something different because this is not going to end at all well. And I've got an opportunity to maybe try something, at least try something.
Okay.
And it was a breakdown. Like, I just literally broke, like, trying to fight. Like, I was chasing and I was hanging on to what I knew, because that's all. Like, that's the only thing that I had when you cut right to the studs was I knew that that's the one thing that could change how bad I felt. Which that had left a long time ago that it actually worked, but you don't know any different. I had no coping skills. Like, my emotional regulation wasn't there. I had no idea how to do any of that. That all stopped at 14, right? Mm-hmm. So the development of a lot of those, like, emotion, like, coping skills and emotional regulation and how to, you know, just how to be a functioning adult in a lot of ways, like, emotionally and mentally, that all stops at 14 when you figure out how to change, like, your persona and how you feel, right? Mm-hmm. So you start at 14 again. Like, you start where you start where you left off from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah. So I don't know. It was, there was no white light. There was no, you know, but I to this day, I truly feel that, again, it was, I just got to the point that I think I probably heard the message of, you know, you've only got a couple more swings at the ball here, and before, like, you're going to be done. So luckily I listened.
Yeah. Right? You know, I did not know, as long as I've known you, I did not know this backstory. And when I became aware of it, you were on Lori's show, Lori Ruderman's show, and talking through that. And I'm like, whoa, because it didn't appear that from knowing you and seeing you in action, that this was the backstory behind that. So lots of times people are in these situations and they could get an Academy Award for that front they're putting on. But in the the back end, it's a whole lot of stuff percolating.
Yeah. And that's, and you know, it's interesting. And this is the nice thing. Like I mean, I love being in recovery, and not because the chaos has been eliminated. It's just because I get to talk to other people at all these varying levels, whether they've been in recovery for 50 years. Like I've met somebody who's been in recovery for 62 years. That's a long time. And I've met somebody who is minute by minute.
Okay.
Like
struggles and daily struggle.
Oh, like they're hang, and you can see, like I can, like both physically, mentally, emotionally, I can see the pain. Like they're white, their knuckles are white in life because they're holding on because they know they only got a couple swings at the plate, right? And they see things, but it doesn't make any sense. Why are all these people laughing at all these stories of pain and suffering and humiliation, right? But the part about recovery is we survived it, so we gotta laugh at it. Mm-hmm. Like you can't, like it, like the days of feeling bad about that stuff happening, because but this is everybody, right? Everybody has, whether it's grief and loss, whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, we all have, like, you know, there's micro traumas and then there's the big ones, right? Everybody has that. Mm. Like, that's the thing, that like every single person, I don't care who you are, like as the human condition, we all have that in our life, and we just have different ways that we figure out how to deal with that, healthy and not healthy.
Okay. Okay. That's, you know, I'm shaking my head because what you said was so true. And I used to always use the metaphor, everyone carries luggage. Some people have luggage and they are loaded down and they're bringing it into the workforce. Some people have the opportunities to leave it at home and come in and deal with the normal day. But I'm glad that you said that, because it, you know, as you talk about what you've gone through, your situation was through drugs or alcohol as you transitioned to that. But what you were dealing with, but everyone, for the most part, as you just said, is dealing with something. And
yeah.
COVID has kind of compounded everything.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was, you know, there's nothing like a global pandemic just to really like exacerbate every single thing you could possibly. I mean, you know, one of the biggest drivers of both mental health and you know, addiction as a subset of mental health, isolation. Right. Like isolation is a killer, whether you're like, it doesn't matter, like whether you're, a child or you're an elder. Right. And everything in between, isolation can really, truly be the HOV lane to get to, you know, to get to places that are not great.
Yeah.
Way quicker. And we're just not designed that way. I mean, there's a difference between isolation and aloneness, right?
Okay.
I read a book years ago, and it took me a year to read this book. It was such a incredibly dry, horrible read, but I was, and this book was so difficult to read, but it was all about the concept of aloneness, where you can be alone. Like you could have aloneness with yourself, spiritually, physically, and really kind of be inspired and actually be refreshed by that. Like it was a really, really interesting concept. I read it kind of early in recovery, like when you talk about like meditation and different ways or different tools I'm being good with yourself and being alone with your thoughts. And I really took it to heart, right? But that's different than isolation.
Okay.
Like isolation is really where, you know, you start, like it just is so unhealthy, the isolation piece, right? So yeah, it just, I've kind of really focused a lot on that the last few years as I got into healthcare and technology, was really trying to take down the barriers for isolation. If we can connect people, like even if it's virtually, right? If we can connect people, like there's still some camaraderie, right? There's still some connection that people can make, and that just, it hits a different part of the brain and the heart. And that's really important.
Here's what I find amazing about you. You were able to take all of those learnings and you became a prolific author. You're now onto your fourth book. That took a severe U-turn to be able to capture all of that. And let me put that there for someone and help someone else who's struggling at that point. Walk us through that. Let me capture all of this and begin the process of chronicling, writing, and seeing what I can come up with.
Well, and I really appreciate the question, because I everybody has books in them, right? Yeah. Everybody, because everybody has stories.
Yeah.
Right. And so I was really blessed that I had a grandmother and a mother who were prolific readers.
Okay.
So I've always, and my younger sister is a reader. I enjoy like every medium, whether it's an audiobook or it's reading or it's like, so I always have been kind of a reader. And I mean, I took a lot of years off because I had other things going on in my life,
a little busy on the other side, but I'll get to it later. Right.
Yeah. But I still was able to consume a little bit of reading. But so had an all right foundation, and for some reason, and I don't know why, and it's so funny, our co-friend William Tincup always gave me a hard time about
it. Oh, okay.
because early on, before I'd ever written any of the books or anything, I was like, we need to write a book. And he's like, he has a very colorful way of expressing himself.
Say the least.
Yeah. And so he's like, you know, I'm not going to write a book. I've written a book. I don't want to write a book. And so I'm like, we need to write a book. I'm going to write a book. He's like, you write that book. Just knock yourself out. And so he used to give me a hard, just playing around. But, you know, I started talking about it probably in 2011. And then finally in 2014, I'm like, it's probably 2014, 2013, maybe. I just decided, like, I think I'm going to do it. So I started doing some research, right? And I was in recovery and I started doing some research. And then I'm like, what am I going to talk about? Right. And how am I going to write it? And I struggled with that. And then I read a book by an author that it just clicked on his writing style.
Okay.
And this, so the new book is about redefining normal, right?
F my demons, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, F my demons. We went a little more probably who I am on the title, and a journey to spirit. I mean, that's kind of the last part of it. But the redefining normal was like, I wanted to write in a way like I think and talk, right? And I hadn't came across an author who just did that and didn't care. And I read a book called Turning Pro by Steve Pressfield.
Okay.
And it just clicked. Like, oh, I know how I'm going to write this book.
Okay.
And I literally, over the next few months, just sort of knocked out the first, you know, the first book, which was kind of a collection of stories. Okay. Like, just that you could pick up any, you could jump into it any place.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I got to the, I was like, okay, man, I'm running out of content. I'm running out of things to say. So I reached out to a handful of friends like Lori Rudiman, Jay Coons.
Okay.
Jay was, and I'm like, so I'm like, can you guys write me a story? I need to finish my book out. And I think they're great writers and they're great storytellers. And so the handful of folks contributed a story to that first book, right? Which was really special to me. They took the time to do that, to finish it out.
Okay.
And so that really kind of gave me the confidence that what the book writing process was. And I got a publisher and she was incredibly supportive and has kind of guided me. And we still work together today. Wow. And that was 2015, published the first one. And then, almost 4 years to the day, published the second one, Sober is Better. And I got a little more into my story versus stories, right? It was the earlier part of my kind of just, you know, upbringing and then career, getting into career and stuff. And I kind of stopped there because I hadn't really unpacked those bags. I talk about this all the time, right? Yeah. You got to have, sometimes you're just not ready and you don't have the tools
to go there,
to unpack. Yeah, to go there, right? To unpack what you need to unpack and work on, right? Like the phrase that I really like is, and it's again, there's a lot of cliches, but it's really true, is like, I'll be ready to see it and unpack it when I'm ready to see it and unpack it.
Okay.
Like, okay. I really believe there's guidance, you know, in the world that it's like, okay, I'm ready. Like, I can deal with that now because I've got more tools and I'm ready to do the work to actually figure this out and fix that. So,
yeah. So the mindset had to come there to that realization, say, okay, let's try this now, as opposed to just sitting there and said, okay, I'm going to start. And where do I start?
Yeah. Yeah. That's it, really, truly is. And the second book was harder to write than the first.
Okay.
Because I knew more, right? I was a little more educated on the process. So I started overthinking things and I tried to write it a different way.
Okay.
And it was really fascinating. And then this third book, I wrote a little bit differently than that. Like, this third book took me like literally an extra year
to put it together.
I just wasn't ready to finish it.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad, and I'm truly glad it took the time that it took, right? Yeah. And so it was supposed to, I was going to publish it in January or February of 2023. And it comes out on January 1st, 2024.
That's cool. But at least check it, because you did that. I want to go back to, we talked to COVID and we talked to people struggling today, and the demons and what's going on behind it. What advice would you give to, if you had to, this is a question I always ask leaders, if you had to present to a CEO conference about the state of the workplace or workers going through whatever they're going through, I call it luggage. What is some advice you would give a senior level audience about, I don't know, whether designing a workplace or something along those lines?
Yeah, that's really the golden question, right? And we've had, and I'll answer it here in a second, is I've had some incredibly horrible leadership in my career, like most people.
We all
that I point to as the example of, never do anything that they did. Just go the other way and you'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
I've had incredible mentors that stretched where they pushed me way further than I pulled and helped me get way further than I thought I could.
Okay.
And so I've been, again, very, very fortunate about that. Cause I have things to contrast and compare. Right.
Okay.
So the one thing that stands out, and I think this is a systemic or endemic cultural thing, is if a CEO isn't curious and he doesn't have and him or her doesn't have a culture of curiosity, continual learning, and really like taking an interest in their people and their product and their customers and their customers' customers, if that curiosity isn't there, it's abysmal boring. First of all, they're so uninteresting to be around, and that is it. Just the motivation to be around uninteresting people is that's a slog. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
But curiosity, and I would say the same of employees.
Okay.
Right. Like, if you don't have an element of curiosity in how you approach your work and your life, then, you know, it gets, what happens is you don't listen, right? Because you don't, if you're not curious, you don't have an ability to listen because you're not asking the questions. You're not going, you know, I wonder what that is. And then you've got like you if you lose that or you don't have that gene or you don't care about that, then you're never going to be the top of your game.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So that's a key point, because reflection. You talk about continuous learning. I leave tonight. I'm flying to Zurich for a week, and I have a stack this big of articles that I need to read. I prefer to have paper and go through market up and all those kind of things. But I'm always curious when I talk to people. I say, so what are you reading? Reading? What do you mean reading? I'm like, whoa, okay. There's nothing there.
And the fascinating thing is it goes for me, and I've been reflecting on this, and I've actually I've got a future book idea that's around curiosity, and it's really kind of came, and this goes all the way. If my wife and I are having a get together at our house, right, and we really kind of have figured out that we really like to have curious people there, because there's no gaps in the conversation, because they have 100 questions that they're like, just like they'll put on the table and we'll start discussing, and it's interesting, right? And if you throw somebody in that is completely about them and what they're doing and their sphere, and there's no curiosity about the world around them, it really sticks out like a sore thumb, right? It's like, oh my God, I don't want to, like, I don't know what to do. I'm so bored, and I'm an interviewer, right? So I'm ultimate curiosity. So
yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because the boredom that comes in. But I read an article one time that the 2008 calamity that happened, and a pastor in Greenwich, Connecticut, set up this coaching group because a lot of senior executives in the town. Greenwich is a very wealthy town. And he kind of wrote an article based on what his learning was from that. And one of the key findings was the fact that people that had achieved that level, they were caught up in the title. They were caught up in the initials behind their name. And once you strip that away, it was hard for them to find themselves.
Anybody that's listening to this, the one thing you can do is ask yourself, am I a curious person? Yeah. Right. Not because I'm curious, because it's going to get me somewhere.
Ulterior motive. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, are you a curious person that you generally, if you have people work with you, for you, that you work with and for, and you have family and friends, like, do you ever ask them, you know, like, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Mm-hmm. Let's get more than like a quarter of an inch deep, right? Like, I literally do that all the time, because like, you know, sometimes it's about work, right? That's where we start, but that's never where we end.
Right. Cause it comes down.
Yeah. Work is easy, cause it's a topic that everybody can kind of progress on. But then it's immediately like, I want to go deeper than that, because that's interesting because it's a part of your life. But I really want to get to like the good stuff.
Yeah. I do a session. Well, I used to do a session in a leadership development program that I had done. And one part of that exercise was to talk about an influential person outside of work that has an impact on your life. And when you saw these adults talking through this, sometimes you could feel the emotion. The voice would break when they talked about the lessons they learned from their grandmother, even something as simple as cooking in the kitchen. One gentleman told a story about his babysitter was his grandfather, who was a CEO at a firm, and he sat there every day. But his grandfather would have him sit in meetings. He didn't know what they were talking. And then after the meeting, he would give him an insight as to what it was about. So when you reflect back on how we've gotten to be where we are, a lot of that comes from, not from a college professor, not from a bad boss, good boss, but it's just the foundational stages of learning. Have you found that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, and I'm a lot more like the older I've got, and especially again, and I said this earlier, I'm so thankful that I'm in recovery because I've got a group. I've got a group of could be complete strangers.
Okay.
That I can sit down with, like I go to, you know, recovery meetings, and I can sit down with a complete group of strangers and I can hear like real things that are going on in their life. Yeah. And I can share real things that is going on with my life. And I care and they care about what's happening to me in that moment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I've been able to now appreciate that. And I'm able to reflect back, right? Who has impacted my life. Mm-hmm. And it's so much, it's the lens has changed, right? I was very resentful of my father for years, years. Like my whole goal growing up is I didn't want to be anything like him. I didn't want my personality like him. And it was impactful in the sense that I wasn't trying to be myself. I was just trying not to be somebody else. Right. Yeah. There's a lot of energy there.
Yeah.
That wasn't healthy. But now I see why he was, you know, how he was. Right. And that wasn't, a lot of that wasn't by choice. Mm-hmm. And just now that I'm able to reflect on it, he was, you know, him and my mother was just unconditionally, you know, just great. Right. I mean, we have our stuff, but relative to, I never, ever had to wonder if my mother had my back. Mm-hmm. And because she grew up, right. We talk about this, the environmental stuff, right. She grew up with parents that were amazing in the sense that their kids never wondered about it. It was a very stable, and like affectionate, like they never wondered if her mom and dad, my grandparents were fantastic. Like I really, truly, my grandma was a teacher. My grandpa was a rancher and, they had a ranch together. And so it was just interesting. And so my grandmother would always take the time. Like she was the ultimate curious person and she was a prolific reader to the day, you know, until she was, you know, the day she died and she was 93 years old. And she would always be like, tell me what's going on with you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Every time. And I wouldn't see her that often because we lived in a different part of the country. But, you know, every year or every 2 years when I would see her, she would always she's like, I need to, you know, catch me up. Like, tell me what's going on and remind me kind of everything. And what is, you know, tell me about the future. And she always, so that currency and that conversation was always there. So, those were kind of the influential folks. And there, again, I have lots of other angels in my life that, you know, that gave me respite and a place to kind of a place to land. So I'll go back to your CEO question really quickly. The other thing is fear of communication. Like you've got to get, like, if you're leading a company or you're an employee, it doesn't matter. You've got to communicate and you've got to get over the fear of the fear of communicating of really what's going on and kind of how you feel things like and where you're at, like, which is part of curiosity. Like you've got to get over that because the lack of communication is a culture killer.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. So you know, when you talk about your grandmother, you know, and your grandfather, I grew up in a household in the Deep South back during the time it wasn't a cool place. But I've always said my parents, my father owned a taxi company and my mother was a housewife. I learned more from them than any education I've ever gone through. The technical side was cool, but the relationship side of just understanding, reflecting, and all those things came from those two people as well as my mother's mother.
It's you know, it's I've got a, you know, and I've got a couple uncles that were really instrumental for different reasons. My dad's side. So mom and dad have different influences.
Yeah.
One super nice and the other one is a big gangster.
Yeah.
And so I learned different, I learned different things from the gangster side than I did from the other side, right? But it all got into the equation.
But you know, as you said earlier, it's all in the learnings, you know, so a little piece here, a little piece here, that's part of the recipe, the ingredients to put it together, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all, you know, and it all contributes, right? It gives me perspective. Like it gives me the ability to be around a lot of different people. So as I moved, like I grew up in the Midwest, right? Midwest where, you know, the only person of color was, you know, basically somebody that was Hawaiian, right? Like eighth Hawaiian. That was, it was a very small rural place in the Midwest, right? It just not super diverse. First job out of school, I moved to Atlanta. Like right in the middle of Atlanta.
Okay. Very diverse. Yeah.
I absolutely loved it. Right. Yeah. I loved, you know, being a, you know, the quintessential minority there. Yeah. That was a, you know, I was 25 years old and that was one of my biggest learning curves was my time culturally in Atlanta. Like, and it really, you know, again, I grew up with a family that I was very lucky. We talked about those things. You know, we talked about like the world is different when you get away from like Midwest, right? Yeah. And everybody's the same.
Yeah.
My dad, the only conversation, real quick, the only conversation that my dad really ever had with me as an adult that we was like wisdom was he said that, look, man, you know, people might look different, act different, talk different. Like he just kind of laid it out. He goes, but you know what? And he related this back to being at, you know, in Vietnam. He's like, you know what? If somebody's laying there bleeding or you're laying there bleeding, he goes, it doesn't matter what color you are.
Yeah.
He goes, we're all exactly the same.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he goes, just remember that as you go into the world and you get around other people, he goes, we're exactly the same. So don't. And that was the one thing, that was the one lesson in my lifetime that I remember him like having a conversation. Okay. He wasn't a big talker. That's probably.
Okay, cool. So. But the learning still came from that. So as we begin to close out, one of the goals of the show is to bring together people like yourselves to talk through the struggles, because so many times, specifically in social media today, we see the top of the pyramid. We see you in Oklahoma giving a big speech and we think, wow, but how do you get there? And this is what we try and capture on the show. So any last minute thoughts as we close out?
You know, it's one, self-care, right? If you don't take care of yourself, like emotionally, you know, it just all like taking care of yourself is where it all starts, right? Okay. And I think that's one of the areas, like from a self-care standpoint at every level, is being open to investigate that. You don't have to be perfect at it. Nobody's perfect, but you got to be open to hear the message, right? Okay. Like maybe there's some things that I can do differently.
Okay.
And being the open-mindedness around that, I think is really critical, because that's going to get you, that people are going to see that and they're going to want to spend time with you and maybe listen to what you have to say or tell you something important that you need to hear, right? Because you're approachable.
Yeah.
But that self-care keeps you healthy, like, and I think that's really important. And to be curious, man, I'm going to go back to that. If you're not curious, it shows up, like, and maybe it's only because in my life right now, it's so important that I just really don't like want to spend a lot of time with people that are not curious people, in the sense that like if just all you got to do is ask, like just ask anything, like ask, like it doesn't matter the question, just ask a question that's not about you, and we're off to the races. So
yeah, go a little deeper. Brian, thank you so much, man. What time is it there?
It is 8, it's 8:48.
Okay, 8:48. So thank you for getting up for this for me, and we'll be in touch. So I need you to hang on as we begin to close out.
Sure. Yep.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Absolutely.
Take the CEO series with you anywhere, anytime. All episodes are now available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and major streaming platforms. It's not just an interview. It's a masterclass in leadership.